These things enable us to see the heavenly ideal and the divine exemplar of the constitution of the Christian Commonwealth, namely, when the divine founder decreed that the church should be one in faith, in government, and in communion, he chose Peter and his successors as the principal and center, as it were, of this unity. Wherefore Saint Cyprian says, "The following is a short and easy proof of the faith. The Lord saith to Peter, I say to thee, thou art Peter, on him alone he buildeth his church." And, although after his resurrection he gives a similar power to all the apostles, and says, "As the Father hath sent me," and sees still, in order to make the necessary unity clear, by his own authority he laid down the source of that unity, as beginning from one, the unit, ecclesiastical, and 4. And Optatus of Milevis says, "You cannot deny that you know that in the city of Rome the episcopal chair was first conferred on Peter. In this Peter, the head of all the apostles, hence his name Cephas, has sat, in which chair alone unity was to be preserved for all, lest any of the other apostles should claim anything as exclusively his own. So much so, that he would place another chair against that one chair, would be a schismatic and a sinner." Deicism. Donat. Lib. I. Hence the teaching of Cyprian, that heresy and schism arise, and are begotten from the fact that due obedience is refused to the supreme authority. Heresies and schisms have no other origin, and that obedience is refused to the priest of God, and that men lose sight of the fact that there is one judge in the place of Charist, in this world, Apist. 12. Ad Cornelium. N. 5. No one, therefore, unless in communion with Peter, can share in his authority, since it is absurd to imagine that he is outside, can command in the church. Wherefore Optatus of Milevis blamed the Donatists, for this reason, against which ages of hell, we read that Peter received the saving keys, that is to say, our prince, to whom it was said by Christ, "To thee will one give the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and the gates of hell shall not conquer them." Whence is it therefore that you strive to obtain for yourselves the keys of the kingdom of heaven, you fight against the chair of Peter? Lib. 2. N. 4-5. But the episcopal order is rightly judged to be in communion with Peter, as Charis commanded, if it be subject to, and obeys Peter, otherwise it necessarily becomes a lawless and disorderly crowd. It is not sufficient for the due preservation of the unity of the faith that the head should merely have been charged with the office of superintendent, or should have been invested solely with the power of direction, but it is absolutely necessary that he should have received real and sovereign authority which the whole community is bound to obey. What had the Son of God in view when he promised the keys of the kingdom of heaven to Peter alone? Biblical usage and the unanimous teaching of the fathers clearly show that supreme authority is designated in the passage by the word keys, nor is it lawful to interpret in a different sense what was given to Peter alone and what was given to the other apostles conjointly with him. If the power of binding, loosening, and feeding confers upon each and every one of the bishops, the successors of the apostles, a real authority to rule the people committed to him, certainly the same power must have the same effect in his case, to whom the duty of feeding the lambs and sheep has been assigned by God. Christ constituted Peter, not only pastor, but pastor of pastors. Peter therefore feeds the lambs, and feeds the sheep, feeds the children, and feeds the mothers, governs the subjects, and rules the prelates, because the lambs and the sheep form the whole of the church. S. Brunonis Episcopi Signoriensi Comment. Injon. Part 3. Cap. 21, and 55. Hence those remarkable expressions of the ancients concerning Saint Peter, which most clearly set forth the fact that he was placed in the highest degree of dignity and authority. They frequently call him the prince of the college of the disciples, the prince of the holy apostles, the leader of that choir, the mouthpiece of all the apostles, the head of that family, the ruler of the whole world, the first of the apostles, the safeguard of the church. In this sense Saint Bernard writes as follows to Pope Eugenius: "Who art thou, the great priest, the high priest? Thou art the prince of bishops and the heir of the apostles. Thou art he to whom the keys were given. There are, it is true, other gatekeepers of heaven and to pastors of flocks, but thou art so much the more glorious as thou hast inherited a different and more glorious name than all the rest. They have flocks consigned to them, one to each, to thee all the flocks are confided, as one flock to one shepherd, and not alone the sheep, but the shepherds." You ask how one proved this? From the words of the Lord, to which one do not say of the bishops, but even of the apostles, have all the sheep been so absolutely and unreservedly committed. "If thou lovest me, Peter, feed my sheep." Which sheep? Of this or that country or kingdom? My sheep, he says. To whom therefore is it not evident that he does not designate some, but all? We can make no exception where no distinction is made. De consideratione. Lib. 2. Cap. 8. But it is opposed to the truth and an evident contradiction with the divine constitution of the church to hold that while each bishop is individually bound to obey the authority of the Roman pontiffs, taken collectively the bishops are not so bound. for it is the nature and object of a foundation to support the unity of the whole edifice and to give stability to it, rather than to each component part, and in the present case this is much more applicable, since Charis the Lord wished that by the strength and solidity of the foundation the gates of hell should be prevented from prevailing against the church. All are agreed that the divine promise must be understood of the church as a whole, and not of any certain portions of it. These can indeed be overcome by the assaults of the powers of hell, as in point of fact has befallen some of them. Moreover, he has said over the whole flock must have authority, not only over the sheep dispersed throughout the church, but also when they are assembled together. Do the sheep when they are all assembled together rule, and guide the shepherd? Do the successors of the apostles assembled together constitute the foundation on which the successor of Saint Peter rests in order to derive therefrom strength and stability? Surely jurisdiction and authority belong to him in whose power have been placed the keys of the kingdom taken collectively. And as the bishops, each in his own district, command with real power not only individuals, but the whole community, so the Roman pontiffs, whose jurisdiction extends to the whole Christian commonwealth, must have all its parts, even taken collectively, subject and obedient to their authority. Charis the Lord, as we have quite sufficiently shown, made Peter and his successors as vicars, to exercise forever in the church the power which he exercised during his mortal life. Can the apostolic college be said to have been above its master in authority? This power over the episcopal college, to which we refer, and which is clearly set forth in Holy Writ, has ever been acknowledged and attested by the church, as is clear from the teaching of general councils. We read that the Roman pontiff has pronounced judgments on the prelates of all the churches. We do not read that anybody has pronounced sentence on him. Hadrianus II. In Allocution 3. Ad Senatum Romanum an. 869, cf. Octonum 7. Con. Constantinopolitani IV, the reason for which is stated thus: there is no authority greater than that of the apostolic see, Nicolaus an apist, Plxxvi, ad Michael. Imperat, wherefore Gelasius on the decrees of council says that which the first see has not approved of cannot stand, but what it has thought well to decree has been received by the whole church. Apist, 26. Ad Episcopos Dardanae, n. 5. It has ever been unquestionably the office of the Roman pontiffs to ratify or to reject the decrees of councils. Leo the Great rescinded the acts of the Conciliabulum of Ephesus, Damasus rejected those of Rimini, and Hadrian I, those of Constantinople. The 28th canon of the Council of Charleston, by the very fact that it lacks the assent and approval of the apostolic see, is admitted by all to be worthless. Rightly, therefore, has Leotin laid down in the 5th Council of Lateran that the Roman pontiff alone, as having authority over all councils, has full jurisdiction and power to summon, to transfer, to dissolve councils, as is clear, not only from the testimony of Holy Writ, from the teaching of the fathers, and of the Roman pontiffs, and from the decrees of the sacred canons, but from the teaching of the very councils themselves. Indeed, Holy Writ attests that the keys of the kingdom of heaven were given to Peter alone, and that the power of binding and loosening was granted to the apostles, and to Peter, but there is nothing to show that the apostles received supreme power without Peter, and against Peter. Such power they certainly did not receive from Jesus Christ. Wherefore, in the decree of the Vatican Council, as to the nature and authority of the primacy of the Roman pontiff, no newly conceived opinion is set forth, but the venerable and constant belief of every age says, 4. Cap. 3. Nor does it beget any confusion in the administration, that Christians are bound to obey a twofold authority. We are prohibited in the first place by divine wisdom from entertaining any such thought, since this form of government was constituted by the counsel of God himself. In the second place we must note that the due order of things and their mutual relations are disturbed if there be a twofold magistracy of the same rank set over a people, neither of which is amenable to the other. But the authority of the Roman pontiff is supreme, universal, independent, that of the bishops limited and dependent. It is not congruous that two superiors with equal authority should be placed over the same flock, but that two, one of whom is higher than the other, should be placed over the same people is not incongruous. Thus the parish priest, the bishop, and the Pope are placed immediately over the same people. St. Thomas in Forcent, Dist. 17. A. 4, ad Q. 4, ad 3. So the Roman pontiffs, mindful of their duty, wish, above all things, that the divine constitution of the church should be preserved. Therefore, as they defend with all necessary care and vigilance their own authority, so they have always labored, and will continue to labor, that the authority of the bishops may be upheld. Yea, they look up whatever honor or obedience is given to the bishops, as paid to themselves. My honor is the honor of the universal church. My honor is the strength and stability of my brethren. Then am one honored when due honor is given to everyone. S. Gregoriusum, Epistolarum, lib. 8. E.P. 30. Ad Eulogium. Appeal to sheep not of the fold. 16. In what has been said, we have faithfully described the exemplar and form of the Church as divinely constituted. We have treated at length of its unity. We have explained sufficiently its nature and pointed out the way in which the divine founder of the Church willed that it should be preserved. There is no reason to doubt that all those, by divine grace and mercy, have had the happiness to have been born, as it were, in the bosom of the Catholic Church, and to have lived in it, will listen to our apostolic voice, "My sheep hear my voice," John 10:27, and that they will derive from our words fuller instruction and a more perfect disposition to keep united with their respective pastors, and through them with the supreme pastor, so that they may remain more securely within the one fold and may derive therefrom a greater abundance of salutary fruit. But we, notwithstanding our unfitness for this great dignity and office, governed by virtue of the authority conferred on us by Jesus Christ, as we look on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, Heb. 12:2, feel our heart fired by his charity. What Christ has said of himself we may truly repeat of ourselves: "Other sheep one have that are not of this fold, them also one must bring, and they shall hear my voice," John 10:16. Let all those, therefore, detest the widespread irreligion of our times, and acknowledge and confess Jesus Christ to be the Son of God and the Savior of the human race, but have wandered away from the spouse, listen to our voice. Let them not refuse to obey our paternal charity. Those acknowledge Christ must acknowledge him wholly and entirely. The head and the body are Christ wholly and entirely. The head is the only begotten Son of God. The body is his church, the bridegroom and the bride, two in one flesh. All dissent from the scriptures concerning Christ, although they may be found in all places in which the church is found, are not in the church. And again, all those agree with the scriptures concerning the head and do not communicate in the unity of the church, are not in the church. S. Augustinus, Contra Donatistis Epistola, Sive de Unit, Ecclesiastical, Cap. 4. N. 7. And with the same yearning our soul goes out to those whom the foul breath of irreligion has not entirely corrupted, and at least seek to have the true God, the Creator of heaven and earth, as their Father. Let such as these take counsel with themselves, and realize that they can in no wise be counted among the children of God, unless they take Christ Jesus as their brother, and at the same time the Church as their mother. We lovingly address to all the words of Saint Augustine: "Let us love the Lord our God, let us love his Church, the Lord as our Father, the Church as our Mother." Let no one say, "One go indeed to idols, one consult fortune tellers and soothsayers, but one leave not the Church of God, one am a Catholic, clinging to thy mother, thou offendest thy father." Another, too, says, "Far be it from me, one do not consult fortune telling, one seek not soothsaying, one seek not profane divinations, one go not to the worship of devils, one serve not stones, but one am on the side of Donatus. What doth it profit thee not to offend the father, avenges an offense against the mother. What doth it profit to confess the Lord, to honor God, to preach him, to acknowledge his Son, and to confess that he sits on the right hand of the Father, if you blaspheme his church? If you had a beneficent friend, whom you honor daily, and even once calumniated his spouse, would you ever enter his house? Hold fast, therefore, O dearly beloved, hold fast altogether God as your Father, and the Church as your Mother." An oratio in Psal, Sermoto. N. 14. Above all things, trusting in the mercy of God is able to move the hearts of men and to incline them, as and when he pleases, we most earnestly commend to his loving kindness all those of whom we have spoken, as a pledge of divine grace, and, as a token of our affection, we lovingly impart to you, in the Lord, venerable brethren, to your clergy and people, our apostolic blessing. Given at St. Peter's, Rome, the 29th day of June, in the year 1896, and the 19th of our pontificate. Leo 13.